You're listening to the NFL Draft Bible Podcast Network, part of Sports Illustrated, giving you daily NFL Draft, Dynasty, and Devy Fantasy Football podcasts.
Welcome in to the Devy Seminar. Yes, that's right. It's the Devy Seminar. We have transitioned from our NFL draft coverage, and I'm calling this the mini-mester. I'm going to spend the next 5 to 6 weeks here rotating around with some guests here to join me. John's taking the semester off. He'll be back with us here in June, but I'm your host, Matt Hicks, the FF Educator, and I'm going to be spending, like I said, the next 5 to 6 weeks here going around and doing a Devy preview series, and I am so excited. I have done what nobody expected and decided to start with the Pac-12, but I know it's not everyone's favorite conference, but I have somebody with me here who is beyond excited to talk about the Pac-12, and that is Stefan Lako. Stefan, college football fantasy podcast from RotoViz. I did a guest spot with them about a month ago. It was fantastic. Highly recommend. It is in my podcast queue. Writer for RotoViz, and potentially most importantly, a fellow distinguished character, a DCL2 league member with me, as well as we're in a Campus to Canton startup draft together right now as well. And perhaps most importantly, a lover of New Haven style pizza as well. Stefan, thanks so much for joining us, man. How you doing?
I'm good, man. You're talking about New Haven pizza is getting me excited. I miss Modern Pizza. Was my favorite spot in down in like the East Rock neighborhood. So good. It is missed.
That was going to be the question. You know, it's very debated, you know, which of the pizza places to me, you know, maybe my palate isn't refined enough. I'll take any of them. Any of the New Haven style pizzas, if you give it to me, it's the 101 of pizzas. It's not a popular opinion, but it's the correct one.
Absolutely. And the reason I like Modern is because you don't have to wait for 2 hours to get in, like at Sally's or Pepe's. So it's like, where can I get it the fastest? And that's why Modern wins. And it was in walking distance from my house. So
that's a win-win. That is a win-win. Well, I'm excited to have you on here. How we're going to do this, we're going to go around the Pac-12 here, and I want to make a point here. I know folks come to us with all different levels of Devy experience. You know, some are newer to it, some are diehards, and you know, we certainly probably fall on the diehard range, but we also make sure to tailor the podcast for folks who maybe aren't as familiar with it. And one of the ways that I think we can accomplish that is we're going to try to hit on all every single Pac-12 school and pick up on some major Devy headlines to follow at each school. I think that makes it a little bit more digestible than trying to dig into rankings and you know, really dive into the nitty-gritty of it, because I mean, let's be honest, at the end of the day, you know, Devy leaves a lot of room for interpretation. There's a lot of variability. So I think what's most important for our listeners here in this series, and we're definitely going to hone in on it today, is really just, you know, what storylines to watch, what players do I need to know about, who needs to be on my radar. And I know we're rocking the Oregon cap here, but I'm going to make you wait, because I feel like the team that jumps out the page from a Devy perspective, I think we got to start here in Southern California with the Trojans, the USC Trojans. And by the way, the incorrect USC, the real ones there in South Carolina. But that's a different topic for a different podcast. We'll wait till we get to the SEC one for that. But let's start here right away, Stefan. I mean, we got to start with Keaton Slovis, right? We got to talk quarterbacks. The question is, can he play his way, I'm putting it in quotes here, back into the 2022 QB1 tier? You know, it seemed like coming off of the 2020 season, or I should say coming off of the 2019 season, you know, Slovis was primed to be a tier one quarterback, you know, takes a step back in a wild COVID year, and you're going to see that's going to dominate a lot of our talking points with the Pac-12. You know, for folks who maybe didn't follow college football as closely, you know, Pac-12 was the last ones to get going. Even then, they still had a lot of cancellations. So some teams only played 3 games, 4 games, 5 games. It was a very odd season. But, you know, USC definitely, I think, suffered from a lot of that oddity. And there were also rumors that Keaton Slovis was potentially injured and playing through that last season as well. So where do you fall on Slovis right now?
Yeah, I love Jackson Dart. I think. No, I'm just teasing.
He's jumping right ahead.
I like Slovis, but that's just it. I like him. I don't love him. To me, he really is going to have to push the ball downfield a bit more than we saw last year. I know the style that they're wanting to play with the four wide receivers. You see a lot of the underneath passing. But for me, for him to take that next step, I want to see what he can do in the vertical game. I think your point of him being injured last year is a really good one, and one that I think, you know, it's hard to know exactly what was going on because they were pretty hush-hush about it, which they should be. But I think that did limit some of his passing aggressiveness. So I want to see that. I'm curious what we'll see early on in the year from USC throwing the football. Now, they lost two really, really good wide receivers. Mm-hmm. Obviously, everyone knows Amon-Ra St. Brown. But, of course, Tyler Vaughns was no slouch either. Really, really solid wide receiver. So having both of them go, their wide receiver room, we'll get into that, I'm sure. It's stacked. So Slovis has the weapons. I'm just curious if he's going to be able to trust his arm. He did mention, like, a lack of confidence about his physical, you know, not preparedness, but just his body was breaking down a bit on him last year. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Like you said, COVID was a real nightmare for them. Not as bad as some other schools like Arizona State, but mm-hmm. they had some issues. But I think Slovis, for me, I mean, he's 6'2", 200, and he's mm-hmm. not a runner. That's kind of a problem for me. Mm-hmm. When it comes to Debbie, we love the rushing upside, and he's not going to provide that. And he's not like a Justin Herbert or a Trevor Lawrence that is like, you know, 6'6 or something like that, and this huge specimen of a man. So he kind of falls in between that, and then doesn't give you the rushing. So to me, if it's not Superflex, I'm not interested. I'm not going to waste a draft pick, a Debbie pick on him. And Superflex, I do have a few shares, but honestly, it's because I'm quarterback needy, and I'm just hoping and praying that he makes the jump. But to me, I don't think he's going to be a tier one QB. I have him as a tier two.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting. You know, if you go back to 2019 when he really broke out, and remember, for folks who may not know, Keaton Slovis was a very lowly recruited. He was a three-star recruit, which, you know, to even land on USC's roster as a three-star recruit, you're an afterthought. Ends up playing his way through some injuries and ends up being the guy taking over with really precision passing, I think, was really the key to it. And I think you made a good point. If that precision and that consistency doesn't come back, you know, he's going to lack some physical tools to make up for that. And so, you know, huge emphasis on this season. You know, he's a guy who I think can go round one, or he could be a day three afterthought guy. I mean, a total, you know, I hope he lands more day one, because I definitely have some Keaton Slovis, but I've cooled from my initial hype on him. I'm certainly not pivoting off of him yet, but I've definitely cooled a little bit. And then the natural question then, staying in the quarterback room, is, you know, the next man up. It's a really interesting situation here. You know, two high-profile recruits here for them at the quarterback position. You have it was an interesting scenario. So Miller Moss, who's more of your prototypical pocket passer type quarterback, 6'2", 197, high four-star recruit. He was the first commit to USC, and late in the process, this prospect out of Utah, who I don't want to say came out of nowhere, but he had a sharp rise. I mean, I think he went from a 3 to a 4-star and 247 composite just in his senior year alone. And that's Jackson Dart. He's 6'3", 210, and he's a little bit more of your creative passer. For me, I have Jackson Dart ranked higher. I think you jumped me to it with your joke there about Keaton Slovis. But, you know, is it Jackson Dart for you, and we're just waiting for Miller Moss to transfer out?
Yeah, I think that's what we have to expect. Dart was, you know, when all things were said and done, he ended up being ranked one spot higher in the overall quarterback landscape for the class. And I think he possesses some of the skills that USC wants to see. And, I mean, the name is just perfect.
Right? I mean, how could you not be good?
Yeah, it's too good. It's perfect. It's an absolutely perfect name for a USC quarterback. I like him quite a bit. I'm not exactly sure what to think of him as far as Debbie goes, just because there's so many unknowns. I'd rather take a gamble on other players. It'd have to be a pretty deep Debbie draft for me to be exploring him, and even deeper for Miller Moss. I thought in the spring game they both were okay. All three of them actually threw an interception and a little bit of a lackluster performance at times. But to me, it's going to be a fight for the backup position. But I'm hoping that they don't need to see the field at all this year, because I do hope that Slovis can produce. But if I'm taking a a chance on one of these guys, it's going to be Dart. And I can't say it's completely not related to his awesome name.
well, certainly a good Dart throw to take late in your drafts. All right, but I mean, you mentioned a high level of vacated production there with Amon-Ra St. Brown, Tyler Vaughns, and this is an offense that we know produces, wide receivers for the NFL, Michael Pittman just being a really recent example, but, a long history of producing wide receivers for the NFL and a long history of bringing in highly ranked recruits at the wide receiver position, which certainly helps. You know, for me, the guy that I have as the next man up, the highest ranked guy on my Devy rankings, and I'm pretty bullish on him, it's Drake London. He's 6'5", 205, just a three-star recruit, I believe, but he was also recruited and I believe currently still plays on the basketball team for USC. So he is a rare modern-day dual-sport athlete. I mean, if he puts it together with this athleticism and some of what we've seen already, some really nice flashes from him in his pass-catching ability, we could be onto something really special here with Drake London.
Oh, absolutely. To me, and this may be hot take-ish, I don't know. Outside of a quarterback who I know you love, from the skill position players, in the Pac-12, he's probably my highest-ranked player in Devy. I love Drake London. I think he's going to absolutely smash this year. I think he's going to demand a very high target share. I think he's going to have a great dominator score when it's all said and done. I think he is going to be the alpha. As you said, I mean, he's a monster at 6'5", 2'5", 2'10", whatever it might be. He's not a burner, but for his size, he sure is fast. And there's not a cornerback in the Pac-12 that's going to be able to shut him down. If Slovis can get him the ball, he is going to produce. I'm really excited. And there were times, even this past season, in the limited action that USC had, where he looked like the alpha already, even with Vaughns and St. Brown there. I remember early on in the year, is that first game against Arizona State, I had a Slovis St. Brown stack running, and I was kind of upset because Drake London was just soaking up all the targets. I was like, oh my God, who is this dude, and why am I not playing him today? So I'm a huge Drake London fan. I'm right there with you. I think he could be the next USC star, and I have not near enough shares. I'm really sad about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you referenced it, and I'm pulling up here my Devy big board, which is available patreon.com/theffeducator. My top 258 right now on the Devy board, and Drake London is 20 for me, and he's the highest rated non-quarterback Pac-12 player that we're going to, player that we're going to talk about that's not a quarterback on today's episode. So definitely somebody in just from what I've seen in ADP, I think I picked him up in the C2C league that we're drafting in now. And I believe that would have been pick 23. So you can get him in the second or even third round I've seen. So definitely somebody who I'm interested in targeting. And any quick thoughts on Keontae Ingram as a potential guy who could get back on the radar here before we pivot off of USC?
Oh yeah, I've got lots of thoughts about I'm a big fan. That's kind of going to be a theme here. If you transferred in as a running back into the Pac-12, you're high on my board. I just think there's a lot of opportunity. And this offense, as we know, likes to throw the football. Keontae Ingram, I think, is going to be set up to really produce in that. It's hard to tell if he's going to get the draft capital that we want for him to be relevant, but I think the opportunity will be there. I don't think Carr has shown enough consistency in their backfield to really threaten him if he can take the reins. And their big boy running back, like Vaya, I cannot say his last name, he is a short yardage back. Mm-hmm. They're gonna use him at the goal line, so you might not see Ingram with some 3-yard touchdown runs, but he's gonna have the opportunity to shine. Before we move on from USC though, I got to talk about Brew McCoy.
Yeah, all right.
Super excited about him.
Yeah.
He was at USC, transferred to Texas, now back at USC, former 5-star recruit, sorry. He had a .994 composite score, so absolute freak. He was the number one athlete in his class. He's 6'3", 220. He's a sophomore with just incredible, incredible upside. I have been targeting him in those middle rounds because he seems to fall. I think he's going to have the opportunity in that offense with as much as they want to throw the ball. He's going to have the opportunity to get his as well. And Brew McCoy is definitely a name that should be in people's minds when they're, if you want a piece of this offense, if you think Keaton Slovis can produce, and then you feel confident about Jackson Dart taking over next year, you're going to want some McCoy in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. 56 in my Devy rankings right now. So certainly still a player to be targeting there. And we talk all the time in Devy or, you know, Campus to Canton drafts, you take the discounts when you can take them,
right.
Especially in a loaded wide receiver room like USC produces. All right, so we'll try not to spend the entire rest of the episode because remember, we want to get to all 12 teams here. But we're gonna talk about Oregon here. And of course, Stefan is an Oregon fan. So we have some nice insider perspective on it here. But I'm going to start with this question, and I'm going to put this in large quotes here. But it looks like what we're hearing is Ty Thompson, and here's the big quotes, lost the starting job out of camp. You know, high expectations for Ty Thompson, the incoming quarterback recruit, and folks thought that he might be able to take that job year one, despite having some pretty experienced quarterbacks there in the quarterback competition. Of course, we saw Tyler Shaw leave for Texas Tech, but it looks like Anthony Brown is what we're hearing is the starting quarterback. Is that how you're reading the situation, and what's your long-term outlook for Ty Thompson? I'm guessing we're still probably really excited about him.
Yeah, absolutely. I love Ty Thompson. I love him so much. He is a man. He balled out at the Elite 11 last year, and if it was just about like the play on the field for like that competition, he won. He beat Caleb Williams. Everyone loved him. Ty Thompson is awesome. Here's a problem with Oregon, though. Their defense is a year ahead of their offense.
Mm-hmm.
If they could keep this defense intact for next year, man, we'd be great. But we're not there. The offense isn't there. And Mario Cristobal is a fairly conservative coach. He's an offensive line coach. He wants to smash mouth football you to death, which people don't think of when they think of Oregon because they just see the highlights of these huge plays. But it's all scheme driven around the run.
And they've built that. They've built that under Cristobal. I mean, that's an intentional effort. And it, not to cut you off, sorry, but it's a characteristic that defies what the Pac-12 traditionally does. So it's important for our listeners to understand that.
Yeah, and so even bringing in Moorhead, who I love, and I think Justin Herbert would have been incredible had Moorhead been his coach, but you saw them give Chuck the reins last year, and there just wasn't the consistency that they wanted. Too many interceptions, too many mistakes made. His highs were super, super high, and I think Tyler in Texas Tech has the opportunity to ball out and have a great career. But it wasn't what Oregon wanted to do. They want to make sure that they rely on their defense and their running game to win football games, and they want to make sure that they're putting their quarterback in a position at this moment with the roster that they have to not lose. Ty Thompson is a question mark. He has all the skill and ability in the world. The sky is the limit for this dude, but they know what they have with Brown. He is a graduate transfer. He was a graduate transfer last year, and then he stuck around another year because of COVID. The dude has experience. We saw he only played in two games last year, but it was a Pac-12 championship and their bowl game. So they went to him late because they could trust him, and that's what they're going to want to do. So I don't think this is a statement about Ty Thompson's potential. I think it's a statement about Mario Cristobal kind of being a bit conservative, which as an Oregon fan, I don't love. I would love to see Ty Thompson out there. I think we could have a similar situation, and please don't think I'm saying that Ty Thompson is Trevor Lawrence, but it kind of reminds me of like the Kelly Bryant,
mm-hmm.
Trevor Lawrence situation where everyone's like, man, this Lawrence kid is legit, but Kelly Bryant was the starter that year, and it wasn't until a few games in that they turned it over, and they would do rotational football, and I do expect them. And we saw it last year. They're not afraid to have two quarterbacks play. So I do expect them to use both. So Ty Thompson will get his share of play. If you're in a C2C league, don't expect any production from Thompson this year. But in Devy, if you don't mind waiting 3 years, you're going to want Ty Thompson because I think he's going to be a stud.
Yeah, this 20
very long-winded. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. This 2024 class is shaping up to be, you know, potentially a really strong quarterback class, and you know that's always easy to say when with an incoming, you know, quarterback class. It's good to get excited about these guys early, but you know I have Caleb Williams, Tyler Buckner, Sam Heward, and then it's Ty Thompson as my QB4 right now in that group, and we're definitely going to talk about Sam Heward as well when we get to Washington, but you know Ty Thompson is definitely up there now. Stefan, there's a couple Devy guys hanging around that I once had hoped for and potentially starting to wane on them. And I'm sure, you know, our fellow Devy diehards are in a similar boat here. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts on salvaging the Devy values of either CJ Verdell or Micah Pittman. Can we get there?
I mean, if anyone's listened to my podcast with this thing, you know I love Micah Pittman. Love him. Dude's amazing. He has incredible body control. He has great hands. Not electric speed, but he can get downfield. He's a really, really good football player. Dude cannot stay healthy. And with the style of football that Oregon plays, they're not looking to find a market share hog in the wide receiver room, and no one has proven to demand it. They've got Jalen Redd, they've got Johnny Johnson III, they've got Devin Williams, they've got Dante Dorman, they've got this five-star recruit who I'm sure everyone knows about, well, maybe not, but Troy Franklin, the wide receiver, just came in. He was a very highly recruited guy. They have a deep, deep wide receiver room, and Micah Pittman, unfortunately, isn't going to do enough this year to get the draft capital that we need for him to be relevant. I think he might be a day three guy, but that's not what you're wanting in Devy. You don't want a guy going in the sixth round who's gonna have to fight to make a team. So unfortunately, I don't think Micah Pittman's gonna be what I hoped he would be, even though I do think the talent is there. And maybe if he was on a different team, maybe if he was on USC, where the offense could rotate around, kind of revolve around his skill set, absolutely. But I don't think in Oregon we're going to see him produce. I have a trivia question for you.
Oh boy,
are you ready for it?
Here we go.
When was the last time Oregon had a wide receiver drafted in the first round?
In the first round?
In the first round.
Oh man,
it's a really mean question.
It didn't happen, right? Is it a trick question?
72.
Oh yeah,
no, it doesn't even matter. It didn't happen.
Here's the thing. We give John Lobb a week off, and he was probably the one guy who would have pulled that out of thin air, and he probably would have been able to answer that trivia question.
Yeah, it's just really sad. And the only reason I know that is because Troy Franklin was like, I'm going to be the first wide receiver in Oregon to be drafted in the first round. And I like Troy Franklin, but again, this offense, it's hard to see, at least in its current version. Maybe when Moorhead has a quarterback he trusts, like Ty Thompson in his sophomore, junior year, maybe we can see Troy Franklin grow into that, but not at the moment.
Anything, any hope left for CJ Verdell or anybody else you want to touch on here with this Oregon offense? Yes, there we go. Okay.
Yes, yeah. So everyone loves CJ Verdell. He's the wrong running back to be targeting. If you want a piece of this offense, and this is especially true if you're on a campus to Canton, or even if you like doing DFS, you're going to want to pay up for Travis Dye. Travis Dye is actually the running back that you want to own from this backfield. Like you said, try to find value. Verdell gets drafted fairly early still because he has that name recognition. And to be fair, first play of the spring game, he busted off like a 74-yard touchdown run. So the dude's good. But if you look at their numbers, CJ Verdell had 65 carries last season. Travis Dye had 64. So pretty much an even split. Dye had almost 200 more yards rushing than him. Dye also is involved in the passing game. So they both had 9 receptions. Verdell for 96 yards. Dye for 239. The dude, averaged 9.3 yards per play, per touch. I love him. The only problem he has is he has a little bit of a fumbling problem, but I think he can manage to get around that. And I think he's going to be awesome. So Travis Dye is a guy I want. I will be getting him in our C2C league that we're both in. I'm really, every time it's my turn to pick, I'm like, not yet.
Well, now I know. You better hope. No, I'm just kidding.
I know, right? He's also involved in the return game, which to me just shows that the coaches want to get the ball in his hands. And there are other reasons, like not so much about Travis Dye. Like if you're not in like a super deep league, like, yeah, probably avoid. But the reason I don't like CJ Verdell is because of Travis Dye. But then you've also got Sean Dollars and Seven McGee in. Seven McGee is also just a good name.
Yeah, that's a 24 guy, right?
Yeah, he's just coming in this year. So they've got a deep running back room. They also have, I forget his name, Habib Lioko, who's their short yardage back, who will be it's a goal line carry, he's getting it, or Brown will take it in, one of those two guys. So the production's just not going to be there for Verdell to get the draft capital that we were hoping for 2 years ago. Honestly, it's been that long that we've been waiting, and it's just not going to happen, I don't think.
All right, well, let's keep moving around here. The Pac-12, we're going to head a little further south here. We're going to go to Arizona State. You mentioned Arizona State, man. That was for the entire state of Arizona, it was a tough football year last year. And, you know, Jaden Daniels, I am high on that. Most of the folks who follow my work know I'm high on Jaden Daniels. You know, big dual threat ability. I love his arm. I love his legs. I love the way that he protects the ball. I think he read the field incredibly well for a freshman. I mean, was not mistake free, you know, certainly, but I had a great touchdown to interception ratio. I believe it was 17-2, and kind of carried that forward here in a really weird COVID year. So I'm hoping he has a big breakout year. You know, he's still in my top tier of quarterbacks. You know, I'm interested to hear if you, let me rephrase this. I'm interested to hear you confirm to me that Jaden Daniels should be a top tier 2022 quarterback prospect.
Absolutely.
There we go.
For that.
All right.
I took him in our C2C league. He's my QB. He's the QB that I'm rolling with.
Can I tell you that that's like the one league I don't have him in? And I was like, this is just getting out of control. Like I gotta chill out.
Yeah, you don't want to be have overexposure. But he's awesome. I love him. And with that new offensive coordinator Zach Hill, mm-hmm. that's in Arizona State, yeah, you're gonna see him run the football even more. He's gonna use his legs more than what we saw. His freshman year. So Zach Hill, he was there, the offensive coordinator, last year as well, but didn't really get an opportunity to really put his mark on the team, just with the weird off season, and then just they played against USC, and then they had like a month off or something crazy. But I really like him. There's two things that I don't love about his NFL prospects. One of them is his weight.
Mm-hmm.
He's a tiny little dude, 182 pounds, something like that. So he's not really big. The other thing that I don't love about him isn't his fault at all. Don't love the wide receivers in Arizona State.
Yes.
Not a great room. They've got some young dudes that they're bringing in, some young recruits.
Some JUCO transfers.
Maybe they could flash, but it's just hard to know because we haven't seen it yet. Now, they've got 3 years in a row where they put like a pretty solid, as far as from draft capital perspective, not bad. Like we had N'Keal Harry, then we had Ayuk, and then now Darby. So mm-hmm. they've been putting wide receivers in the league. So maybe we should trust that one of these guys will break out, and Jaden Daniels will be a big part of it. I'm right there with you. I love this dude. My buddy's a big CU guy. He's like, how do you like this guy? This is insane. He's way too small. We're going to crush him. Like, the dude just knows how to play. He protects his body. Like you said, he also protects the football, which mm-hmm. is huge. He's not turning the ball over.
Right.
He's putting his team in great situations to win. In the type of NFL that we have now, where like Kyler Murray is QB2, for fantasy purposes, Lamar Jackson's up there. I think Jaden Daniels fits the type of player that people are no longer afraid of and actually wanting to draft in the first round and high in the first round. So I'm all in.
Yeah, and he is, you know, his current weighing is 175. He is 6'3", so he, you know, he has the height that you want from a quarterback, but certainly it makes his frame look even smaller than it is. That if you look at a picture of Jaden Daniels, I understand why folks can get a little bit nervous at times.
But like you said, like I think he only has in his career, I think he's only thrown like 3 picks.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Same. He crushes Oregon every time. Like even if they don't win, he just destroys us.
and
I hate you, but I love you.
And like a top 5 candidate for toughest uniforms in the country. So especially when they're rocking their all black. So
yeah,
that certainly helps as well. Are you buying into the Tranium hype at all?
Yeah, is that how you say his name?
I know. I don't know.
I've been avoiding saying it.
That's how we're saying his name on this show here tonight.
Yeah, let's do it. No, I like him a lot. Travis May, one of the co-writers over at RotoViz, he loves Rashad White.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. Like Rashad White on 42 carries, averaged 10 yards a carry. Like explosive run. Like really, really good. But Trainum or Trayan, however you say his name, he was a higher prospect. He was more highly sought after.
Super athletic.
He's at 0.9 composite score. He was recruited by Penn State, Ohio State. Dude was wanted everywhere. He flashed big time. in some key spots for Arizona State last year. So I'm a huge fan. I have quite a few shares of him as well. I like to get a piece of this offense between those two players, again, avoiding the wide receivers. Rashad White, going to be cheaper, but I just don't know if he's got the upside that Trainum has. But I do like both of them, but I think he could be something really, really special. He's 6 foot 220. He can move. He's a big guy, but he doesn't run tall, so mm-hmm. he can still like lower his pads and get those extra yards. I'm all in on him too. I feel like I'm all in on all these players. I'm just a Pac-12 stan.
Well, I think as we proceed down the show sheet here, there might be guys that you're less all in on. And
I guess I did poo-poo on all my Oregon Ducks outside of Ty, though, so I think we're okay.
That's true. Yeah. We're a neutral source here. Well, let's move on to UCLA here. I think this is a team with some sneaky intrigue. And listen, I know I am not in the popular camp here, and I was bummed that I did not get him in our current draft. I'm in on Zach Charbonnet to UCLA, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts on it. I think we're going to see his stock, man. I don't know if we're calling it like a Doge rise, but we could see it go to the moon, man. You look at what he was able to do at Michigan when he was given the opportunity, and then you look at what Joshua Kelly and Felton to a degree in a smaller sample size were able to do in this Chip Kelly scheme. I'm all in on it because I think Zach Charbonnet is easily a more talented power back than Joshua Kelly. And so if they feed him the way that they fed Joshua Kelly, I mean, what, that got him third round draft capital for being a total jag for the most part, right? Just another guy. And I think Zach Charbonnet has more explosive ability, more athleticism, and better straight line acceleration. Are you with me on this?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. All right.
Like I said, these transfers coming into the Pac-12 with running back, I'm all in. he was when he joined Michigan, he was a lock to be a first rounder. You know, everyone thought he'd be a first round running back, like that high. 6'2", 215, super high prospect pedigree, and he's fast for a big guy. Like you said, I really, really like him. Even though he had a down year last year, the dude on for his career, and I know yards per carry is a stat that people hate, but when it's 6.5, I'm going to notice it. Mm-hmm. 6.5 for your career after having a real crap year is pretty, pretty good. So I think he's going to be really effective. And again, one of these misunderstandings about Chip Kelly's offense is that people think it's a, you know, throw the ball around the yard type of, it's not. The dude likes to run the ball.
Right, right.
He likes to spread you out, create mismatches in open space, and utilize his best players. And that is exactly what we're going to see we'll get into it in a minute, but not only with Zach Charbonnet, I'll just say that. I think Charbonnet is going to be awesome. I actually was listening to a podcast the other day where they said his name was Charbonneau, and I'm like, what? And that blew my mind. So now I'm all kinds of insecure about how to say his name as well. I do think Britton Brown is interesting in the backfield. Mm-hmm. Interesting if they do trust or if they rely on Zach exclusively, or if they do go more of a committee backfield. But again, in college football, that doesn't scare me quite as much as it does in the NFL, because if you're producing, you're going to get yours.
Yeah, it seems to kind of be the way that Kelly has gone. I mean, I know Felton got like 75 carries the season that Kelly was there, but I think Kelly got, you know, well over 200 in that same season. So relatively, he seems to be, you know, really kind of a feed the rock to a main back kind of guy. So I have two guys right now. You know, when I updated my Devy ranks, one of the things that I found when doing Devy rankings is that after you get past like 150, I realize it's really arbitrary to put guys in rankings. And so if you're on my Devy big board now and you're outside of 150, I've just labeled you as watch list. You know, you're worth having on the radar, but I'm not going to rank you against the other guys on there. And I have two UCLA guys right now on my watch list, one of them being Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who I feel like has been playing college football forever.
Yes.
And then right, and then I also have the tight end Greg Dulcich. I'm getting that one. I'm not doing good with these pronunciations here tonight. But, you know, he's kind of a tight end. He had some sneaky good production there for the really small sample size this past year. You know, are either one of these guys, you know, somebody who you're seriously, you know, looking into for Devy purposes?
Man, tight end is tough for Devy anyway. Mm-hmm. If it's tight end premium, though, and it's a deep enough draft, Dulcich is pretty – he's been producing. The thing that scares me is he was a walk-on. So he doesn't have that prospect pedigree that you might hope for, but he's 6'4", 240. He averages close to four receptions, 74 yards, and three quarters of a touchdown per game. So not bad, not bad at all. But the thing that I really like about him is he averaged almost 20 yards a reception, 19.9. So the
wild
is a downfield threat, and that's what you want from the tight end position, because if you're only going to get a couple of targets and a couple of receptions a game, well, let's maximize those with some yards.
Right.
And, he's shown that he has the skill set to do that. So I'm extremely curious. I wish he had a higher prospect kind of profile. And I wish he would have been a four-star and all the big schools were looking for him, but they weren't. As far as DTR goes, he kind of reminds me a little bit of, I think if Chip Kelly can utilize him the way he did Dennis Dixon back in Oregon, sorry, I'm sure not many listeners are going to remember him.
No, I got it.
The guy there right before Mariota, and I was a big fan, and I was one of those idiots who's like, why is he leaving? He needs to stay. But then everyone's like, no, trust us. Marcus is going to take over and everything's going to be fine. But Dennis Dixon was really, really athletic. He could really... he could run the ball, he could throw the ball, he could do absolutely everything, and he knew how to utilize space. So that spatial awareness piece, I think, is huge. And I think Chip Kelly, now in DTR's senior year, is really going to be able to use that. If you look at the numbers, man, DTR's quarterback rating has gone up every single year. So I think he has the capability to really shine this year. I think UCLA's offense is low-key exciting. Kind of like what you said, like kind of a dark horse in the Pac-12. I'm not expecting huge things, but I think for how kind of sketchy things were at first at UCLA and the question marks we had after that first season with Chip Kelly, I think he's kind of putting it together now, and I think UCLA could be really good.
Yeah, I think we got a little something brewing there in the Pac-12 South. There could be some pretty good competition there. No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, man, watch some tape on Dulcich, and you see him lining up, like, split out wide, foot on the line, just taking off and just eating cornerbacks alive. It's pretty fun. It's pretty fun.
I know what I'm doing later. All right. let's flip it on over. We'll head to NorCal, and we'll talk about Cal here. I got Chase Garbers. That's really all I got from Cal. And, you know, Chase Garbers annoys me. You know, I talk to my scouting guys, and you know, what I'm hearing from the scouting team, and there's guys that like him. I think this guy, he's just mediocre enough to be a day two NFL quarterback. You know what I mean? Like, he's just fine enough where I think the NFL is going to like him. They're going to take him in day two, and he'll never see the field. But, you know, he'll end up on some fantasy rosters because he had day two draft capital as a quarterback, and we'll get too excited. And I don't know, is that how you see it with Garbers? Is there any upside to his game?
One stat really, really sticks out to me. Well, two things really. He's a senior, and so he, you know, final year probably. But the one that really jumps out at me is a 5.6 adjusted yards per attempt. That's really, really, really low.
That's not good.
That's booby poops.
Yeah.
People give Alex Smith a hard time for dinking and dunking when he was doing that. He makes Alex Smith look like Mahomes, like going deep. You know, like,
yeah.
This dude does not he does not push the football.
I mean, a lot of screens, a lot of in the flat, I should say, when you watch Chase Garber's tape. Unfortunately, I've watched some games of that already.
Yeah, and he's like the opposite of what we are talking about with Jaden Daniels, where this kid has thrown half as many interceptions as touchdowns.
Right.
So I don't like that.
Right.
So I want nothing to do with him. I'm not going to use him one time this year in DFS. I'm not going to have him on any C2C teams. I wanted to like him. I was excited about him this time last year, taking the step as a junior, but it didn't happen. He kind of regressed, and I'm not interested at all.
Yeah, I'm there. I'm glad we're on the same page. Anything else on Cal before we head on and talk about your Buffs?
I think, yeah. I think Cal is going to be a better real football team than anything for fantasy sports. Or like, if you like placing wagers against the spread, which Matt and I talk about on our podcast, I think Cal might be a sneaky play. A lot of times, I think they're going to be a good team. I think they're well-coached. But for the purposes of fantasy football, no thank you.
All right. Well, then, no thank you for us. All right. Let's head on over to Colorado here. I've got a couple guys, you know, just kind of on my watch list from Colorado, but I'm actually going to pitch it to you to start because I know you're more honed in on the program. So I want to see if who I'm watching is who you're watching and see if we can get some confirmation bias there. So, you know, in terms of this Colorado, you know, football team in general, who are kind of the guys that might pop from a Devy perspective?
Yeah, I think it's going to depend what happens this year. So we all know that Ravel took over so late in the year because all of the Michigan State nonsense that took place. So he didn't really have time to recruit anyone, bring in a whole bunch of coaches. So he kind of just rolled with what he had. So I'm curious what that's going to mean for this year. Sam Noyer, I thought did a fine job as QB, but not a great job. He now has a shoulder injury. So I don't even know. Like, he just had surgery. He didn't play in the spring game. I don't know what he's going to do. So if Brendan Lewis has the opportunity to start at QB. He's a sophomore. He was a pretty highly recruited guy. 6'3", 210, dual threat. He could make this offense exciting, and I think he could make Jarek Broussard, who I think is the most important name from a Devy perspective to talk about, he could make Jarek Broussard even more efficient. Now, 5'9", 185, junior running back, that's not what we love to hear, but he's been able to overcome that. He led the Pac-12 in both rushing attempts and rushing yards. I think maybe even all-purpose. No, someone else did all-purpose, but rushing attempts and rushing yards. 156 for 895 and 5. He was also engaged in the passing game, even with, I mean, I don't know if everyone knows this, but Noyer was playing safety the year before he started as quarterback for CU. So that should tell you something. But Jarek Broussard's definitely a guy that I think can produce at the college level in C2C. Leagues, those campus to Canton leagues, definitely you're going to want a share of him. I think there's enough there for some deeper round Devy interest, at least for me. I could be seeing, we were talking earlier, I went to CU, so they do have a soft spot in my heart. So maybe I'm seeing things incorrectly. I'd love to hear your thoughts on Broussard, because maybe I'm absolutely crazy.
No, I mean, he's the guy, you know, that, you know, I honestly, from Devy purposes, I don't think there's much here with Colorado, but, you know, he's one of the two guys that are on my watch list at this point in time. You can't ignore the production. The production looks fantastic, but like you said, you know, undersized running back, you know, we start to get into scat back type territory when we're projecting them to the NFL, which is never where you want to start as a prospect, right? If you get there, you get there. But, you know, that's kind of the main guy that pops out to me. And then, of course, you know, the younger Chenault brother is always just an interesting, you know, storyline to look out for. But, you know, are we going to get an emergence here of that?
I mean, the problem with Bonte is he is an off-the-field problem.
Mm-hmm.
He had a DUI last year that led to a suspension, came back, and then had another violation in February where he was driving without a license and speeding and all this kind of stuff. So just the off-the-field problems kind of scare me off of him, because he's not as talented as his big brother.
Mm-hmm.
He's not as versatile. LaVisca was lining up at wide receiver. He was lining up at running back. He was even lining up at quarterback. Like,
yeah, he was.
The things that, yeah, that's why people were interested in him.
Right.
Vontae doesn't have that skill set. I don't think he's worth risking, because at this point you're talking about, like, I'll just take a dart throw on him. His brother's in the NFL. Who knows? But between just the lack of what I think the lack of versatility and skill set and the off-the-field problems, I'm not going to touch him. Someone that I do like, and I don't know if people know this, but Jerry Rice's son, Brendan Rice, plays for CU.
Oh, wow.
He had just an awesome game against Utah last year where they kind of unleashed him. He had two just massive, like, 60-yard-plus touchdowns. So I'm going to watch. If Lewis gets the nod at quarterback, Brendan Rice is someone, he's only a sophomore, so he's someone that's going to be on my radar. I'm not drafting him this year, but he's, like, on my watch list, like you mentioned, that I'd love to see what he can do. I don't know if I would be interested if his dad wasn't Jerry Rice. So, but because of that, he's on my radar, and he did have some really nice flashes last year.
Well, that's,
just, you know, think about it.
No, that's good that I got somebody else to add to the watch list here. This is always fantastic. And so it's so fun about Devy and college football. There's so many layers to every team that sometimes it could feel impossible to get everybody. But that's why you talk to smart folks. And
he was a four-star. He was a four-star recruit. He's 6'2", 204. Like, He's got the frame. He's got the pedigree. He could flash. Who knows?
And we're going to talk about another legacy here after our next team. And I think the Oregon State conversation should be pretty brief here. If you're an Oregon State fan, you might want to skip ahead. Probably just hit that 30-minute, you know, or 30-second fast forward twice. That should probably cover you here. Listen, Oregon State, man, they are struggling. Finished 109th in the 2020 high school recruiting rankings. That's per 247 Sports. 109th. There's what, 58 Power 5 schools or something along those lines. And I mean, easily the worst Power 5 conference. They finished below the majority of Group of 5 teams. I mean, it's a bad showing for Oregon State. And you know, with Jamar Jefferson gone, I'm not sure we have anything Devy to look at. I mean, am I missing something here?
I will say I like Jonathan Smith as a head coach.
And, draft him in your head coach leagues.
And Tristan Gebbia is one tough SOB, their quarterback, but that's fun for Saturdays. It's not great for Sundays, you know?
Yeah.
Like you said, I don't think there's much here. They have had a history of producing some decent running backs that go to the NFL, but, I mean, like Jaquizz Rodgers back in the day.
Hey.
I'd love to see Jamar. I think he's a talented back, but he's gone now too. So, I mean, Oregon State did beat Oregon last year, which was really, really heartbreaking.
and it was the game that Justin Jefferson truthers just clung on to, right, for like 4 straight months?
Oh, he crushed. He crushed our defense. It was really bad. But yeah, I don't think there's much to talk about here.
All right. Then we won't go any longer. Stanford's at a really interesting point, I feel like, in their program as well. But one guy we didn't get to see last year, we thought we might. I'm sure the shortened season played into this. We were talking about legacies earlier. We have E.J. Smith, of course, the younger son of Emmett Smith, who surprised many when he chose Stanford. You know, he was in line for some of the more, nationally high profile, not that Stanford isn't a high profile school, but you know, he talked about it being an academic decision on top of a football decision. EJ Smith could have gone, you know, to most programs in the country when it was his time to be recruited. So I think we were expecting to see a little bit more of him, but you know, from your perspective, you know, I'm certainly expecting him to be the dude there for Stanford this year. Is that kind of what you're keying up to as well?
I don't know. I kind of like Austin Jones.
Okay.
For this upcoming year. EJ Smith did play in 2 games last year, only had 3 receptions, 0 carries. He didn't do a whole lot. But like you said, he was a highly rated 4-star. I think he had like a 95 composite score. Just, he's a good prospect, absolutely, to your point. And Stanford does have a pretty decent legacy of running backs, like, you know, like Christian McCaffrey and others.
Never heard of him.
Yeah. I actually like Austin Jones quite a bit. He was also a 4-star. He's kind of like he's a junior, so like there's some trust there. Mm-hmm. Stanford's fairly conservative on their player development, in my opinion. He's kind of a Duke Johnson-esque type player, mm-hmm. where he can really do. He's a really versatile back, so I think they'll want to utilize him just with Jack West now taking over the reins at quarterback now that Mills is in the NFL. I think they're going to want to be a little bit more safe. And Austin Jones just provides that with his experience. He had 550 and 9 touchdowns last season in only 6 games. So he really produced at almost 100 yards and 1 1/3 touchdown per game. So I don't think he's just gonna lose that.
Right.
But EJ Smith is someone that's interesting just because of the pedigree, like you said. I just don't know if we're gonna see it this year.
All right. Well, certainly somebody to at least keep an eye on, and then down the line as well. Moving on to Utah here. Can we please just talk about Brant? And here's another one I'm going to get wrong. The tight end, is it Kuth?
That's how I say it.
Okay. Well, then that's how we'll say it. Let's talk about him, because I hope we don't have to talk about Charlie Brewer too much.
Dude, I hate to tell you this. I love Charlie Brewer.
Oh, my gosh.
I loved him with Baylor. I thought,
well, he's a fun college quarterback.
Yeah, he was pretty rough last year, but the year before, I thought he was super fun. But you know that he went 15 for 15 for 150 and 2 in their spring game? Like, didn't throw an incompletion. Like, Charlie Brewer is the truth.
Oh my goodness. Well, you know, I hate to make a joke about it, but in all seriousness, I mean, this guy is one more concussion away from just not seeing the field again. I mean, he's at like he's at a serious number of documented. So, you know, from I think he's an awesome college player, but I can't see the NFL taking the risk on him. I seriously think he's like one hit from being done from the game.
Yeah, it is sad. And they did bring in a couple, like they brought in a Texas guy.
Yeah.
As well, they have a pretty deep quarterback room. But we can talk about Brandt. I'll just call him by his first name.
Brandt, because Brandt K, yeah. Because he's legit.
Yeah, the only thing I don't love about him is that he's only 6'2". Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's only one other tight end in the NFL that's 6'2". You know who that is? Another trivia question.
Oh, boy. It's going to be Kylan Granson. He was undersized.
He was recently signed by one of my favorite football teams. Mr. Tim Tebow.
Oh, jeez. Remind me to never go to trivia night with you.
Yeah. Anyway, so 6'2", 230. Makes me a little nervous just for the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious what, you know, NFL execs will think. I mean, we saw what happened to Brevin Jordan this year, someone who, you know, is not an elite blocker or even a good blocker, fell forever, and now is in Houston where he will never be what we were.
Break out and ball. Yep, ball out. Yep. All right, yeah. We agree.
Anyway, but to your point, Brandt has really produced. I think he's been a great security blanket, more than a vertical threat. But in Stanford's offense, where they do utilize a lot of the short passing game for the tight ends, I think he could put up numbers. I think he'll get drafted. I just don't know where. So I'm not as high on him probably as you, mm-hmm. but I would love to hear why you love him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the profile, it's always tough. It's always tough to profile out tight ends to the NFL, and then you have to extrapolate what works with fantasy. So, you know, I think from a fantasy perspective, you know, you have the pass-catching ability, you have the athleticism. We've seen some pretty solid production there. And then for me, there's not much to pull the targets away from him this year, so I could see him having another great season. But, you know, you're talking about the profile. We've been seeing here's the challenge. We've been seeing these guys get drafted. It right, like DeGuara 2 years ago and Kylan Granson this year, but where do they get put when they get drafted? Is it these H-back hybrid type roles? And that's what ends up killing them. So, you know, he's a fun guy to watch. We'll have to see not only when he gets drafted, but where he gets drafted and where he gets placed, because that's probably going to have more of an emphasis than, you know, necessarily his skill set will.
Yeah, I agree. But I do think Jack West won't hurt him.
I think
West is a pretty solid quarterback. He was number 10 in his class. He had to wait behind Mills. He's ready to go. Probably only have 1 year, but I think he'll be... He's not going to be there. If Stanford's offense is terrible, it won't just be because of their quarterback play. I think West is going to be just fine.
All right, let's move on to Washington here. We got three teams left, Washington probably being the biggest of the three. You know, Sam Heward is the big incoming quarterback recruit. For a lot of folks, similar to what we were talking about with Ty Thompson earlier, we thought Heward was going to be able to win the starting job. He had an interesting situation. I believe he played the first half of his spring high school football season because it had gotten pushed, and then he tried to come to spring camp and win out the job. It's an impossible situation for anybody to try to learn the playbook and catch up like that. So it looks like we're set for 2022, potentially when he could join not only Ty Thompson, but, you know, potentially Caleb Williams at Oklahoma, assuming Spencer Rattler goes to the NFL. And, you know, we could be looking at this storyline, Heward versus Thompson, in a really, you know, the three powerhouses there in the Pac-12 right now. You know, is this somebody that you have pretty highly regarded as well?
Yeah, I've got him right behind Ty Thompson.
Of course you do. Of course you do.
Yeah, you mentioned, like, in the show doc, you mentioned, like, a rivalry, that like the rivalry between the Ducks and the Huskies. And I just had to remind everyone that since 2004, Oregon is in the lead 14-2 head-to-head. So, you know, but no big deal.
No big deal. Casual.
I lived in Seattle for a while, so I don't hate the Huskies like most Oregon fans do. But Heward, like everyone knows, like he comes from a football family, dad's a coach. Like his uncle is Brock Heward, who like is all over like the NFL right now. Like,
mm-hmm.
on Fox, I think. I don't remember where.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I like Sam Huard. The thing that really concerns me about him is Jimmy Lake
mm-hmm.
and John Donovan, the offensive coordinator. Jimmy Lake was the DC for so long in Seattle. When Peterson moved on, they recruited from within, which I think is a great football decision for the Huskies program. I think they're going to win a lot of games.
Mm-hmm.
They averaged less than 25 passes a game last year. It's going to be hard to produce elite numbers with those opportunities. Now, part of that was, you know, all the COVID stuff. I'm sure keeping it, it was also Jimmy's first year as the head coach. They just brought John Donovan in. So there's a lot of newness. So maybe we see them open it up a bit. But to me, the style of play, like, they also don't really have wide receivers. So, like, let's get running backs and tight ends and play that way. And it's just,
yeah,
it's going to limit Huard's ability to really kind of maximize his skill set. So that kind of concerns me a little bit for him. But the talent is there. And I think that most NFL teams will probably overlook that. And so he'll probably still go. I think he's projected to be a first-round quarterback.
Yeah, five-star recruit.
He didn't.
Yeah, he was a huge get for – it was like the hometown get, right? And not a lot of folks expected him to stay with Washington.
I think he initially committed in 2018.
Yeah.
When he was like a sophomore. And everyone just expected that, like, as he grew up – he'd be like, no. What was I thinking? I don't want to stay in Seattle. I want to go somewhere else. But no, he stayed, and huge get for them. One of the things that also concerns me is Washington's brought in a lot of pretty good quarterbacks,
mm-hmm.
and they just haven't panned out. They mm-hmm. have not become great. A lot of these guys like Jacob Eason, Jacob Sermon, Eason got drafted, but
yeah, and he was great. Yeah,
mm-hmm. I think you and I are the only people who know who he is still. You know, like, because we still have him.
Deeply
buried on some
many taxi squads. Yes, many taxi squads.
Yeah, but so they just haven't really been able to develop the quarterback position, and I don't know if John Donovan is the quarterback. He's the offensive coordinator who is also the QB coach. I don't know if he's the right guy for it. So I'm a little bit concerned for those reasons.
Yeah, and, you know, he's got some interesting, he or whoever's throwing the ball, you know, has an interesting tight end target here in Cade Otton, 6'5", 246. You know, Otton was a guy who I think was flirting with the 2021 draft, ends up coming back with a productive season. You know, I think he could push himself into the probably top five of the tight end rankings, I would think, in the 2022 class.
Yeah, he led the team in receptions and yards, which, I mean, he led the team with receptions with only 18, so it's
right.
Not like they only played like four games or something, so it wasn't crazy, but I like him a lot. I think he has a really I think he is what I always hoped Hunter Bryant would be.
Oh boy,
I was a huge Hunter Bryant fan.
You and me both.
I think Cade Otton's going to be really good at the next level. He's a very complete game, and he's 6'5", 240. Like, he's not a small kid,
so right,
he can move people, and I think that his game will translate to the NFL.
All right, fantastic. Let's move on to Washington State here. Delora is really the only guy that I have on my list here from Washington State, and even he's kind of had a rocky go of it.
Ooh, that's interesting. I'm going to have to ask you about someone in a second here. Yeah, Delora, the problem with him is similar to Vontae. He's mm-hmm. just kind of making some stupid decisions.
Yeah.
He had a DUI. He's been suspended. He wasn't able to play in the spring game because of it. So Jarrett Guantano transferred from Tennessee.
Jeez.
He's fighting for a spot, which that should tell you enough about the quarterback.
Listen, if Guantano is the quarterback for Washington State, I got some bad news for the Cougar fans in the room. All right, I promise you it won't be pretty.
Well, but
yeah. Oh
Cooper,
boy.
Cooper's a four-star recruit who could be okay, but yeah, Delora to me, like, he has some moments of absolute brilliance. We're like, man, this dude can really play well. He's got great athleticism. He's a very creative football player. He could be extremely exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in a Rolovich offense.
Right.
I'm not going to take a shot on him because I don't know if he's still going to be on a team 2 years from now because he just doesn't have the maturity. And, like, we all know, like, diva wide receivers is a thing. You don't want your quarterback to be that way, really. Like,
And if they show it this early, it's just not a good sign. And listen, you know, it's college kids grow up, right? And
right.
You know, people grow up. People in general grow up. But it's not... You know, we aim for less volatility in Devy. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like the less volatile you are, the better you are as a Devy prospect because it's hard to hit anyways. So you don't want that type of volatility on your Devy roster.
Right. So you're totally out on Max Borgi?
I put Max Borgi in this place in my mind where I totally repress him. I mean, you know, I was hating on Max Borgi when Max Borgi was a thing. Like, it's right. He's not good. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. He's not, like, for Devi purposes, he's just bad.
Yeah, Matt liked him for a long time, my co-host. And I was like, yeah, I don't really see it. Like, he's tough. Like, he's a tough runner. But I was like, I was not as high on him as everyone else.
Yeah.
So then when you just kind of bypassed him completely, I was like, wait a second, am I going to be the high guy on Max Borgi in this conversation? But no, I don't want him either.
It's relative. Don't even put him, he's not even on the watch list. I'm uninterested. He probably should be, but I don't care. All right.
I have zero shares. I intend to keep it that way.
Last team here, it's Arizona. I mean, what a...
So we're done with the podcast.
So, yeah, what a... You know what, Arizona, you're better off than Oregon State, but just technically, Jamar Joyner. I think I would have liked Jamar Joyner better if he had transferred like he originally intended. They talked him into coming back. I was a Grant Gunnell fan. I think I am maybe even more here. He's with Memphis now, but that's going to be a different episode. You know, the wide receiver Jamarcus Joyner, he's worth watching, but who the heck's throwing him the ball?
Yeah, Will Plummer.
Yeah. Ooh.
No, I actually, like, when I was thinking through, like, you would ask me, like, what my thoughts were on Joyner in the show doc, and that's what I wrote down. I wish he would have transferred.
Yeah.
Because he's anything. Or declared, even. Like, he would have gotten crap capital. But crapital? Is that what we can call that?
Oh, I like that. Coin that. Trademark.
Yeah. But, like, he's just not going to be able to do much. Like, he might have, like, all of their receptions, and it still won't be enough. I didn't love the Jed Fish hire for Arizona anyway, coming in for Sumlin. But even if Fish is a great head coach, the makeover at Arizona is going to take a couple of years.
Yep.
They don't have a great roster, and it's just a shame that he's going to be stuck there with Will Plummer throwing him the football. I mean, shout out to you, Will Plummer, if you're listening. You know you're my boy, but...
Big fan of the podcast. Yeah, Will listens in every week, as he should. But I mean,
I'm unfortunately not excited about Joyner just because of, I just don't know what he's going to be able to do there.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, 16.2 yards per reception in 2019, 34 receptions for 552 yards, 5 touchdowns, and that was in a horrible offense. A bad offense in 2019, a horrible offense in 2020, and he comes back. So, you know, I don't know if he just wanted to be there, but 6'1", 210, you know, he's got the potential. So this might be a guy who ends up getting buried in the storylines again, and then, you know, pops up in flashes when it comes to athletic testing time, and then you're like, who the heck is Jamar Joyner? And you know, you heard about him here back in May of the year before.
Yeah, he could have a good combine and get noticed, but he could also not even be invited because nothing happens for them in Wildcat Country.
Absolutely. Well, Stefan, thank you so much for joining here on the Pac-12 episode of the Devi Preview Series here. Like I said, we're going to be doing this here over the next month and a half. Starting here with the Pac-12, Stefan, a college football fantasy podcast from RotoViz. It's in my queue. All the RotoViz podcasts are fantastic, by the way. You know, listening to Travis as well, the Campus to Canton one. You know, I am a subscriber over at RotoViz, so I definitely support the work, writing as well. Thank you again so much. And on Twitter, at StayFunLaco.
There you go. For sure. Thanks for having me. My son wanted me to tell everyone to check out his YouTube channel, Dragon Swipe. His mom said if he can get 100 subscribers by the end of summer, she's going to buy him a gaming computer. So let's get him that computer.
I'm about to subscribe right now. And by the way, you should give that a sub, if nothing else, because he got kicked off of the internet so that we could stream with some good quality. So he deserves it.
Yeah, no, it was real fun talking. You're a real crazy man for doing the Pac-12 first, but I can respect it. It's impossible to watch Pac-12 games, so at least we can talk about them. I'm glad that Larry's gone. So,
all right. Well, thanks for joining, and thanks for listening, everybody.